Hello. It's been a minute, but this is the Ace Pod 3.10, brought to you, as always, by the law offices of E. Jason Blankenship. Connor is out today, but today we have the man of the Grand Castle, Alex Cook, joining us for Hoops, as well as Thick Stauskas himself, Dan, joining us also for Hoops. This is an entirely Hoops episode, which I'm sure you're really bummed to hear that we won't be discussing any football. But that's what happens when Connor isn't here, is we go off on the basketball. Before we jump in, Alex, first of all, wonderful post on the Castle blog this week. Second of all, how you doing, man?
I'm doing really well. Thanks for asking. Yeah, I posted, I guess, what I would call a treatise on depression on the Castle blog. It's something that I've dealt with for a really long time. It's something I've been open about, and I finally was able to kind of articulate a little bit about my experience, give kind of a fresh spin and fresh perspective on, you know, what it's like to be depressed and how to cope with it. And I think it turned out really well. So I'm sure Ace will link it in the show notes. Again, I've been blogging about the Grand Castle at grandvillainy.com or grandvillain.com, excuse me. And yeah, feel free to check it out.
Yeah, no, Alex is maybe selling himself short. This was a really, really impressive piece. And it's as somebody who has both known Alex for quite a while now. I mean, we were talking today about how it's been about a decade. And also has dealt with similar issues. It really resonated. So read up on black bile theory, everybody. It's good stuff. And yes, it will be linked in the show notes. Dan, yes. I'm sorry you haven't written anything that I can link. But how you doing, buddy?
I don't have any like fun creative projects. I have a normal 9-to-5 job. I was thinking it would be funny if I like came on here and plugged like my company that I work for, like my large corporate organization.
Just start plugging specific tweets.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, no, Ace, I'm bummed to hear that we're not doing any football on this segment. I mean, I had a whole, Ben Van Sumeren to MSU postmortem film review ready. So, I mean,
oh no,
I think we're short
on all seven of his tackles.
He was going to start this year, Ace. All right, never mind. We'll get into that later.
Yeah, that's we'll let Connor come in to talk about the entire vibe situation of the Van Sumeren boys, I'm sure. But first, we're going to start this one off by talking about the Ohio State basketball game that happened on Sunday because, we did discuss it on the MCO podcast this week. I just didn't get enough, and we haven't heard from Alex and Dan about it. So, Alex, I will throw it to you first. What was your kind of, like, big picture takeaway from what was a huge win in a top five game for the first time between these two teams?
Yeah, so in one of the Fab Five's runs to the Final Four, they faced an Ohio State team that had, I believe, won the Big Ten in the Elite Eight. Was a heavyweight fight, high-scoring game, went right down to the wire. And this was just like that. You know, you would expect to see this in the Elite Eight or the Final Four, and great offensive basketball, great shot making by both teams. And, you know, Michigan made some plays down the stretch, Justice Ewing threw that behind the back pass, and Hunter Dickinson was enough on the offensive end to carry the Wolverines to victory. It was a great watch. It was probably the most fun regular season game we've had in some time. And yeah, just great vibes all around.
Yeah, no, this was an extremely enjoyable game. It was one of those where sometimes I really get into the rhythm of taking notes during a game, and it's easy to be like, all right, this is my job tonight, and I'm not getting emotionally caught up in this. And for this game, it was kind of agonizing to stay locked in on the work aspect of it and not get totally caught up in, like, holy crap, this is an extremely fun game that I am also very emotionally invested in now, that it's because it was so good that you want to win. Dan, any big feelings out of this one?
No, I mean, I think you guys said it the best. It was the type of game that you kept waiting for kind of the other shoe to drop. I mean, it felt like the kind of game that, like, I'm used to Michigan, like, losing in a sort of way. Maybe that's just being a fan of the team and kind of like perceiving things that way. But it was just like it was just an all-time classic, you know, shootout that they came on the they came out on the right end of, and that's just such an incredible feeling to have. I've definitely been riding that high all week, you know, given that so much of my self-worth is caught up in Michigan sports, which is healthy. And then also, I mean, it's sort of just, you know, showed me like another way that this team can win games. It's just, it's shocking to me how consistent this team has been. You know, just like very few games that they aren't like looking extremely sharp in. And also just like how many different ways this team has shown that it can win games and win games against really good opponents. I mean, we've seen them lock down teams and play like kind of ugly, like slobber knocker fights. We've seen them, you know, shoot the lights out of the gym. And, you know, we've seen them go down, like pretty much ride Hunter Dickinson to a victory. And it's just, this is the type of team with the type of consistency that I feel really good about making a deep March run with.
Yeah, and to your point about kind of expecting Ohio State to pull away in the second half, I definitely felt that as well. Michigan shot 10 of 13 from three in the first half, which you expect that to regress in the second half, and it did big time. It swung way past the average, and they only shot 1 of 10 from three in the second half, but they were able to generate a ton of offense getting into the lane. Mike Smith's impact on the game, I think, was kind of undersold by his box score stats of 11 points mm-hmm. and 7 assists. And, you know, Michigan was able to withstand punch after punch. And, you know, on the road against a good team in the conference, you expect them to go on a second half run. And, you know, Michigan always had an answer defensively. So, you know, Ohio State was able to score at will at times, but, you know, Michigan kind of put enough offense together to win.
Yeah, 1.37 points per possession on their way to 92 total points. That'll do in most games. It was closer than you'd think in this one. But I did ultimately feel like Michigan, especially considering they were playing in Columbus at the shot, I wasn't as down on the officiating as some, since they at least kind of kept the whistles in their pockets for the most part. But I think it's fair to say the officiating slanted a little bit against Michigan if you had to choose which direction it went. I know there are some Ohio State Bucknuts posters that may disagree, but
yeah, and you kind of expect that on the road, to be honest. That's just kind of college basketball.
Absolutely, and you also expect, you know, a couple block charge calls to just be screwed up, because those are hard even at any level of officiating. They mess those up in the NBA. But it did seem like Michigan kind of took the best shot that Ohio State could give them, and this wasn't necessarily the best game that Michigan could play, at least on the defensive end. This was a noticeably rough game on that end for Eli Brooks, which is definitely not the norm for him. And you also had Michigan kind of sticking with playing their centers on EJ Liddell, even as Liddell was pulling them out to the perimeter and either going past them and getting to the line, getting buckets, or getting threes when the centers, especially Hunter Dickinson, weren't getting out to the line. So
yeah, I was going to say that there were definitely a few tactical things that I didn't really like from the defensive side of the ball. Like, you know, if Dwayne Washington's hitting tough threes and you lose on that, that's, you just kind of tip your cap to that. But, mm-hmm. you know, sticking Dickinson on Liddell instead of Kyle Young, I thought was a little perplexing, as well as, you know, trotting out the 2-3 to kind of combat the perimeter oriented offense. I think it worked insofar that it, you know, kind of forced Ohio State into tougher jump shots, but it exposed Michigan on the defensive glass a little bit. And yeah, I mean, Ohio State scored 1.3 points per possession, and that's good enough to win almost every basketball game. You know, Michigan's good enough on both ends of the floor. Like Dan said, they could win with their defense or with their offense, and they definitely had to overcome, you know, a poor defensive performance. I think Dickinson's shown maybe in the last few games that he is a little bit better at guarding in space and guarding smaller players, but I didn't really like him on Liddell, and Liddell wound up putting in an efficient 23 points, so didn't seem to work out so great.
Yeah, the problem with Liddell is more that he's like a true three-level guy, and Dickinson having to respect both, the three-pointer, the off-the-dribble game, and the post-up, it really puts him in a bind when he's also got, half a mind on helping and protecting the rim. And you can see when he was kind of pulled between those two things at times. Meanwhile, Kyle Young, I mean, he's got 10% usage in this game. He only takes five shots, pulls down one offensive rebound, and that's while, drawing kind of Livers or Wagner or Brandon Johns when he was out there for 9 minutes. But it kind of feels like a waste of those guys as defenders to have one of them checking Young, even if they're able to help off him a fair amount, which they did in this game. Especially since Michigan's defensive principles are generally not to help that much, I would certainly, in a hypothetical, say Big Ten tournament rematch, like to see maybe them try Dickinson on Young, let him wander off, because if Young shoots a jumper, honestly, that's fine. But meanwhile, Liddell putting up 23 points while Washington is still able to get to the basket is something that you maybe don't want to see again. So
Right.
we'll see how that goes.
And CJ Walker also played well for Ohio State. So, definitely some struggles from Smith defensively as well. And yeah, I would expect some tactical changes, if there is a rematch down the line at some point.
It does feel like sometimes Juwan likes to kind of stick to what he wants to do. At least, I think he will make adjustments, obviously. We've seen that. But it seems like, at least to start games, it feels like he wants to, not really necessarily make adjustments to, his own scheme until he has to. I don't know. A couple different times, you definitely see Michigan giving up some things that you would think would be, part of the initial game plan. And then, they make the adjustment after, the first time out or something like that.
Yeah, Michigan definitely plays the way they want to play. You see that with ball screen coverages. You see that, kind of with the offensive tactics as well. So, yeah, I definitely think that's true.
Yeah, and I think I mean, there's something I would say that to be said for that in terms of especially when looking at development, especially when looking towards the postseason. I'm okay with sacrificing a regular season win or two if it means that you're getting the kind of in-game reps in certain situations that just provide better practice than you're ever going to get on the practice court. Because it's just impossible to replicate full speed reps against teams you haven't seen before, against first stringers. It's just a totally different thing. So, maybe keeping Dickinson in there and having him guard Liddell for, pretty much 30 minutes is something that will help pay off in the Big Ten tournament and the NCAA tournament next year. And that's something that, Michigan got away with in this game and still won. And even if they hadn't, maybe, the fans might not live with it as easily as Juwan Howard, but I think Juwan Howard would at least, be happy with his reasoning behind it. And there's also, I mean, you had some really impressive other stuff going on in this game, namely Justin Ahrens basically getting played off the court, doesn't score in 15 minutes, only gets 2 3-pointers up. One of them is a relocation shot that he airballs. Gets a defensive rebound and otherwise doesn't put up a single stat. That's the guy that's normally bending defenses away from the interior. Ohio State was able to overcome that and was still able to shoot from beyond the arc, but it took a really impressive performance from Dwayne Washington to get there. So what Michigan was able to do against Ahrens is hopefully something that they can replicate against other, wing shooter types, because he was just totally erased.
Yeah, and to your point about Arns spacing the floor, it was kind of almost an interesting inversion of what we were used to seeing during the Beilein era, where Ohio State was playing the five-out offense and really stretching the floor and forcing a more traditional big and Hunter Dickinson to guard in space, and kind of mixed results in that. But it's definitely interesting seeing that dynamic from the other side, and knowing the way that basketball is kind of trending in general, you would maybe want to be on the five-out outside of things, but when you have a 7 foot one scorer with this kind of polish and skill, you see the value of having the really tall dude who's good at basketball right by the basket. There's still a place for that in the college game, especially.
Yeah, yeah, especially since the college game is a little bit more compressed than the NBA game, and the shooting isn't quite as high level, even with the line in a little bit closer. I do not mind at all having Hunter Dickinson on Michigan, but I think that's not the boldest statement in the world. Before we move on to kind of what's ahead for this basketball team, any final thoughts from either of you guys on this game?
You know, I think we would be remiss if we didn't mention Shaundi Brown's impact off of the bench. Some key threes in the first half, a possession in the second half where he got a couple offensive rebounds, some great defense, and his fingerprints were all over the game, and especially in a game where Michigan didn't play especially well defensively, having his energy and, disruptiveness on that end was pretty nice. He played the 3-and-D role off the bench as a six man pretty much perfectly.
Yeah, he's an ideal six man.
And also, anytime I tweet about him, his mom retweets me.
Gotta love that engagement.
Yeah.
All right, shout out to Shaundi Brown and Shaundi Brown's mom. Hopefully that means she listens to this podcast now. On the other side of this break, we're going to look ahead at Michigan's next three opponents because we got a pretty packed week coming up.
When your plumbing breaks, you hire someone who knows how to fix plumbing. When your power goes out, you hire an electrician. When you are injured in an accident, you should hire someone with experience. Jason Blankenship, a Michigan law graduate, has over 20 years of litigation experience to help you. Jason has handled matters and venues across the state and country, from various circuit courts across the state through the Michigan Supreme Court and the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. Jason's experience in both federal and state courts makes him able to handle your complicated personal injury case. Before starting his own firm in 2014, Jason worked at a large plaintiff's firm, but he left in order to give his clients the personal attention you and your case deserve. Jason selects each case personally, and you will deal directly with Jason to resolve your case. The insurance companies have teams of lawyers on their side. You should have someone on your side, too. Call 248-533-0516. That's 248-533-0516. Or email jason@blankenshiplawyer.com.
All right, before we dive in to the discussion of Michigan's games against Iowa, Indiana, and Illinois coming up, we actually wanted to talk a little bit about who's the real player of the year. And that discussion has come down to Luka Garza and Ayo Dosunmu kind of emerging as still, I would say, somewhat of a dark horse contender considering Garza has been the wire-to-wire favorite this year. But there are significant cases to be made for each player. Dan, I mean, you were the one who helped put together a lot of these notes when we were prepping the show, and specifically had some stronger takes about Ayo than I expected. So I'd love to hear your thoughts to start this out.
Yeah, no, thanks, Ace, for that backhanded compliment. You're surprised that I that I put together Hoops takes that weren't just like, damn, he's a problem, huh?
he's a bucket and a problem.
He's a bucket and a problem. So yeah, let's start with the main points for Io, I guess, since he's, you know, kind of the challenger. So he's the only player in the NCAA with over the last 11 seasons to average at least 20 points, 6 rebounds, and 5 assists. So I mean, you know, he's really like a complete point guard for Illinois. I do think though, just like statistically speaking, in turn, like any advanced metric you're gonna look at, like it's gonna have Luka Garza as the higher impact player. I think any argument here for Io really has to revolve around just how clutch he's been. I have not watched every Illinois game this year. I've watched a lot of them, but so many times he's hit a couple of game winners, I believe, but he also has just made so many plays to he's made so many plays to kind of put Illinois over the edge, especially against some of the worst teams that Illinois has almost lost to, which is a thing that they just lost Michigan State last night, but they've also almost lost to a lot of other bad teams. And honestly, Io has really just pulled them out of the fire on so many of these occasions. So I think that's really where the argument has to start. He's got massive usage, and he's pretty much dragging this Illinois team, you know, to be as good as they are. I think the main point against him would be that, you know, if Illinois was winning the league right now, I think that I would, I might even just give him the nod for player of the year, because he's really like by far and away the best player and the biggest motor of the best team in the league. But they're not. Michigan is winning the league. And, you know, it's not like Illinois is really making it that much of a race right now. I think any other year, Io would be a really strong candidate for player of the year. But I don't think he matched up to Garza. But that's just my opinion. What do you guys think about that?
I think that's pretty fair. As much as I want to kind of make the argument for Io, most of it comes down, I would say the thing that hasn't been brought up yet is that, Garza is the most dominant offensive player in the country. There's no question about that. He's the key to the best offense in the country. That might be the best offense in KenPom history, when it all is said and done this season. We'll see, where that goes over their final stretch here. But while Iowa's defense isn't really, they have problems beyond Luka Garza. They've got some pretty limited guards, especially their starting guards, on the perimeter. They're not the most athletic team. They're coached by Fran McCaffrey, who's never put together a good defense. So, I mean, Garza is not the entire problem here. But he is a guy who, you know, he's a center who barely averages over a block a game. He's not really a rim protector. He has to play drop coverage because he is really, really slow, especially laterally. So his defensive limitations, cap what Iowa can be on that end. And that kind of limits, you know, like there's a whole thing about pretty much every NCAA champion of late being top 20 in KenPom in both offense and defense. And no matter how good Iowa closes, they're not going to get there on defense. So they're going to need to be the very rare exception. So I think the argument for Io is that you can build a legitimate championship team around him, around this version of Io, that can win the whole thing. And I'm not necessarily sure you can do that with Luka Garza, even though he's been so dominant this year. I still think he gets the edge just because Io's argument kind of becomes a team thing at some point, and this is an individual award. But the defensive stuff, I think, especially since Garza is a center, keeps me from thinking he's a dead lock for this, like he should be given his stats.
Yeah, I think Io is cooler than Luka Garza, much cooler, so I'm gonna go with
No
him
question.
on that basis alone. No, but in all seriousness, Garza leads the country in scoring, super efficient. To your point, he really is the focal point of Iowa's offense. Like, his gravity in the post opens up everything else for their shooters on the outside, and just the relentless motor. I haven't seen, since I've started following the league closely, probably about 10, 12 years ago, I haven't seen a player as dominant offensively as Luka Garza. But Garza's number one in the KenPom Player of the Year rankings. Io is number three. I think a good faith argument could be made for either. I think both will be first team All-Americans by pretty much everybody. And, it'll be interesting. I think, to your point, Iowa's defense and Garza's, I got, culpability defensively is a little under discussed in this discussion, but offense kind of drives these awards, and you can't really replicate the presence he brings on that end.
And offense
Yeah.
is also more important. I mean, in basketball, just that's the thing that matters the most is putting the ball in the hoop. So, I mean,
And he's really good at that.
yeah, great offense overcomes great defense, and Garza's offense very, very often, more often than not, overcomes his defense. Aesthetically, though, it's no question. Dosunmu's got the edge. So if it comes down to it, if we need a tiebreaker, it's going to the Illinois guy.
Yeah, and it's a subjective award anyways. So yeah, let's the Ace Pod selects Io as Big Time Player of the Year. I love it.
Yes.
If you let me register my dissent real quick, as the only one who's sticking up for Luka Garza, he's not getting enough attention this year. But I will say, I do think honestly though that anyone that is arguing for Io over Luka for Player of the Year is making kind of like a LeBron argument where LeBron really should have more MVPs than he does, in my opinion, but people sort of get like tired of him, I think, and get used to just how good he is. And if you look at this by any objective metric, I think that Luka is, clearly the best player in the league this year. That's Iowa's defense is hilariously bad, and but that does lead to a lot of really fun games to watch that Iowa plays in. So that's my final take.
Yeah, and to your point on the advanced stuff, I mean, Garza leads Dosunmu in Porpogatu on Torvik's site. He leads him in box plus minus by like 4 points. He's got a 13-point edge in offensive rating on almost identical usage. He's got a 6-point edge in true shooting percentage, and obviously he's a much more dominant rebounder, while Dosunmu is a much more effective passer. But they also take right around the same number of 3-pointers, and Garza has hit a few more this season. So yeah, it's it I like as much as I want to argue for the more complete player, Garza's overwhelming offense, I think, has to take it. And with that leads in well to our discussion of Iowa as a whole, which we've largely covered already because it centers so much on Luka Garza. But that is Michigan's next game on tonight, when this comes out. We've covered, a lot of the basics. Garza is the centerpiece of, the best offense in the country, which is a little concerning when trying to game plan. They're just def offensive efficiency is an even 127 points. That's just bonkers. And they're also first in Big Ten play. They don't turn it over. They are reliant on the 3-point ball, but when you see how they play, I mean, you understand why the 3-pointers go in at such a high volume because of the attention that Luka Garza commands, and also they rebound a crap ton of their misses and draw a lot of fouls. Also, in large part, because Luka Garza is down there in the post. And you've got other great shooters in Joe Wieskamp and Jordan Bohannon. Keegan Murray has been a really effective player off the bench for them, who's starting to come around as an outside shooter too, which would make him a pretty scarily complete player. as a lanky 6'8 freshman. CJ Frederick is healthy again and hitting over 50% of his threes. And McCaffrey brothers just seem to find ways to be positive players, even though they're not particularly good shooters, especially with their ability to kind of work their way inside the arc and then a lot of times get the ball inside to Garza or his backup, Jack Nungi, who's one of the better backup bigs in the conference. He's not Garza, but he can either play at the same time as Garza or function as the center. So they've got just, from an offensive standpoint, a really tough team to deal with. From a defensive standpoint, it's a really fun team to attack. So, Alex, which do you see kind of winning out for Michigan?
You know, it'll be really interesting to see how Michigan chooses to defend Garza. You got to think Dickinson will draw that assignment, obviously, but how much help they give him, you know, whether they want to double or not, that's kind of open to debate, I guess. Given how dominant Garza was against Michigan last year, you've got to think that they're going to bring some more help. But to your point, that opens things up for everybody else. And with those two, there's a lot of familiarity as well. They worked out together over the summer. They were on the same AAU team in the DC area. So really going head-to-head with two of the best big men in the country, let alone the conference. I do think Iowa's defense... Fran loves trotting out that crappy zone that makes no sense. The assignments are like, oh, if the ball's entered here, you got to move there. And like, I haven't seen any zone. It kind of looks like a 2-3 sometimes that has all the worst characteristics of a 1-3-1 somehow. Like, I don't really understand it. But I do think Michigan will be able to hopefully slow Iowa down for stretches, you know, just be able to, because you're not going to keep them under a point per possession.
Nope.
But if you can, you know, hold them to a 5-minute stretch or, you know, kind of one of those TV timeout windows where they only score one basket, that'll give you some chances. And, you know, if Michigan's hitting their open shots, I think I like Michigan's odds.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I mean, it's hard not to sort of go with Michigan right now, given how I would say, like, you know, this is the type of game where you see an emotional letdown, but we just have not seen this team, like, have an emotional letdown, you know, knock on wood. But I do feel that, you know, this is another game where it's like Michigan can win so many ways. I think that they'll do enough to bother Iowa's offense to get them down to, like, you know, 1 point per possession or something, and then they'll go for like 1.3 points per possession against Iowa's awful defense.
I wouldn't mind that outcome one bit. Yeah, and it helps that Michigan gets to play at Chrysler just for the not traveling factor, at least heading into this stretch, and they've had a little bit of time off, at least compared to what they'll get coming up here. Goodness gracious. Getting ready to write some recaps. One other factor is if Iowa does get into any sort of serious foul trouble, which they're generally pretty good at avoiding, their bench tends to be pretty limited. Like Joe Toussaint is they're probably their best perimeter defender by a good margin, but he's also just a total wild man on offense who does not have an outside shot that you have to respect. He doesn't even really take them. And they've occasionally broken out freshman Tony Perkins, who also does not shoot threes. Aaron Ulis is kind of not really getting used much at all, but he's a guy who also does not shoot. So there is a chance if, you know, Michigan is kind of able to overwhelm Iowa physically that hopefully they can, you know, get to some of the weird guys, as certain Big Ten coaches would put it, and maybe gain an advantage there.
And speaking of, you know, maybe potentially being able to overwhelm Iowa a little bit, despite having a National Player of the Year candidate at center, they're pretty bad on the defensive glass. You've seen Michigan more under Howard than Beilein be willing to send people to the offensive boards. Like, Shaundy crashes the glass, Brandon Johns when he's in. Hunter Dickinson and Austin Davis both, you know, would have top 50 offensive rebounding rates if Davis played enough minutes. That could be somewhere where, you know, Michigan, you know, even if the shot isn't falling from outside, they can still potentially get some second chance opportunities.
Yeah, and they might not even need to send a ton of extra help to the glass because Luka Garza is not a particularly good defensive rebounder. He's hanging out kind of in the range that you more want your number two or number three rebounder to be at than your center. So that's an area where maybe Hunter Dickinson can feast a little bit.
I don't get how his, you know, functional speed and quickness is so useful on the offensive end. Like, he beats everybody down the floor in transition every game. It's crazy. And he's so slow and plodding on defense. It's it's really something to watch.
He looks like Austin Davis on defense.
Yeah, he really does.
There might be something to be said for Luka Garza maybe expending more of his energy on one end of the floor than the other. But it is really amazing, and this will be a huge key for Michigan. And thankfully, I've been impressed with Hunter Dickinson's ability to get up and down the court this year. And, you know, while he's looked tired at the end of a couple games, it hasn't seemed to impact him in games, and that's going to be really key because Garza just flies up the court on misses and makes and, you know, defensive rebounds and steals and anything. And a lot of Iowa's kind of quote-unquote transition offense is still post-up stuff, but it's post-up where Garza maybe has a mismatch or at the very least he has deep post position because he's beaten his man down the floor and sealed him off, and a lot of times that's just an automatic bucket for him. So probably the biggest key of the game for Michigan is going to be preventing Iowa from being able to run out, because if they can keep this a half-court game, they should be able to generate more buckets in a wider variety of ways. And Iowa just doesn't have the defense that Michigan does. So that Michigan's balance should hopefully, in a half-court game, help them overcome the Hawkeyes in what should be a really fun game. Less fun is Indiana basketball. So we're going to try to get through this portion pretty quickly because they're just a brutally bad team to watch. They just lost to Michigan State at home in one of the least fun games of the season to watch. Took in all 40 minutes of that, and I regret it deeply. It was not worth the schadenfreude. They're coached by Archie Miller, which means the offense is very stagnant. They play two posts. One of them is extremely good. That is Trace Jackson Davis. The other one, Race Thompson, is all right, but he's often hanging out in the dunker spot when people are trying to drive, and that is not good for spacing and finishing, and their guard play just sucks.
Yeah, they really only have one guy who can make shots from the outside, and Armand Franklin.
So, yeah, any worries about, I mean, like, Indiana is a team that where, especially in Assembly Hall, even without fans there, you're kind of worried that you can, you know, get tripped up. But in terms of, like, on paper, is there anything that's super worrisome about this matchup to either of you guys?
I will say that Indiana's defense is pretty good. So that could be a situation where if Michigan's cold shooting from the outside, they're not going to be able to generate super easy two-point baskets like they can against some teams or like they were able to against Ohio State. So as far as potential concerns go, it would be Trace Jackson Davis maybe going for 25 and 10 and then Michigan shooting like 18% from three or something.
Yeah, that would take a big flip of three-point luck for Indiana, who is currently last in the Big Ten in three-point percentage allowed. But three-point defense is largely a myth, so we don't want to be unfair to them. They do have the 11th-ranked defense in the conference, so they haven't quite held up as well. Again, 11th-ranked defense in the Big Ten is the 37th-ranked defense nationally, in case
That's
you're
insane.
Wondering how hard this conference is. But yeah, Indiana has not quite held up as well against their tougher opponents, which is a good sign for Michigan as long as they don't kind of look past this one, because the opponent after that, which I want to spend more time on because that is more than enough Indiana basketball talk, is Illinois. This is the Io and Kofi Coburn show. They have an interesting supporting cast. I do like Trent Frazier a lot as a secondary ball handler and three-point shooter, guy who knows what he's doing on defense. He's been around forever, it feels like. Georgi Bishanisvili is kind of an awkward fit because he got recruited over by Kofi Coburn. He's a better fit at center and does pretty well there when he gets kind of those backup minutes. When he's playing power forward, you run into the too big spacing problem because he's not a tremendous three-point shooter. And he is a slow-footed defensive player, so he can't get taken advantage of by most fours on that end. They have some interesting role players in Andre Curbelo, who's kind of just a wild man at this
point. He's fun. He's really fun.
He tries a lot of audacious stuff, and a fair amount of it works, especially inside the arc. His three-point shot isn't falling at all. He's 3-for-22 on the year. But he gets the line. He dishes out a decent number of assists. He also dishes the ball to the opponent more than is ideal. But he is a really interesting player. And Damonte Williams needs to be mentioned just for the fact that he is shooting 57% on 42 three-point attempts and 59% on 29 free throw attempts. And he's only taken 18 twos this year and made half of them. So he is just an intensely strange player. And while you look at that 57% mark from beyond the arc and go like, oh man, we have to like stick like glue to this guy, when you watch them play, he actually has less gravity than you think because he takes freaking forever to get his shot off. Which explains why a guy who shoots 57% from beyond the arc is only taking about 2 threes a game. He's out there mostly for his defense because as the free throw percentage would indicate, that three-point mark might be a little bit of a fluke. And at the very least, he needs kind of a catapult-level amount of time to get that thing off. So his usage is 8.9%. You always are going to have a wallflower or two when you have Io and Kofi leading the way on offense because those guys absorb a lot of possessions, but that is minute. Now that I have blabbered away about most of their personnel, anyone have thoughts about how Mitchell meshes up with these guys?
I want to say, I think Coburn is one of the most interesting players I've watched in the Big Ten since I've been paying attention. Guess how many assists he has on the year?
Oh, I know this answer.
You told us earlier. I'm going to guess 3.
Yes, exactly 3. He has 3 assists on the year. So he's an absolute black hole that Michigan should double at every double and foul often, honestly, because he's a terrible free throw shooter. Like, he still seems to be he's so physically dominant, but he is still it feels like figuring the game out to such a crazy degree. But he's still very effective despite, not being good at anything besides getting the ball like posting up.
Yeah, and I think Illinois really could do a better job of getting him the ball. I feel like there's a lot of games where he establishes good post possession and then never gets a touch. Mm-hmm. Illinois is a team that, very much like Michigan, controls the paint on both ends of the floor, and that really starts and ends with Coburn. Great two-point defense, great two-point offense, and that's the kind of stuff that's really sustainable over the long run, which makes me think that compared to Iowa, Illinois would have a better shot of advancing further in the NCAA tournament. But it'll be interesting to see how Michigan guards Io. You got to think Eli Brooks will draw that matchup at first. Could be an opportunity for Shondi Brown to give some minutes as a primary defender. But yeah, it'll be Coburn versus Dickinson is big men basketball at its finest.
And one thing that Michigan State had a lot of success with was just sending the house at Coburn as soon as he got the ball. They were not bashful about sending multiple defenders at him, and Coburn still did not register an assist. He only had one turnover, but he goes 5-for-11 from 2 in that game, which is a rough outing for him. And only 3-for-11 from the line, which is largely responsible for Illinois losing. Michigan usually pretty reticent to send help to the post, but I think just given how little Coburn kicks the ball back out, and the fact that there's usually at least one player on the court for Illinois that you can help off of as a three-point shooter without worrying too much about getting a shot rained on your head, that I wouldn't mind seeing Michigan kind of switch up their normal post defense.
Yeah, and I would say also, you know, for a defensive strategy, if Coburn gets the ball in the post against Austin Davis, I want to hear a whistle immediately.
Oh, I want to see a bear hug.
Yeah. Yeah. This is definitely an Austin Davis has five fouls game, and he's got to use them.
Yeah, I mean, and Brandon Johns might, you know, get drawn into that too. I mean, because you want to have Hunter Dickinson available as much as possible and not try playing to avoid fouls.
You mentioned the Michigan State Illinois game last night, which I didn't catch the whole thing, but I watched good portions of that. And man, those teams were clubbing the shit out of each other. That was a real physical, nasty game. So I'm thinking Michigan can probably expect the same from Illinois.
Yeah, I mean, those two teams were getting at each other a little bit, not in, you know, both on the court and in terms of. I think Bajanis Vili picked up a technical foul in this one, and there's a lot of woofing. There was a couple times where the teams kind of came together. You had two guys from Michigan State foul out in 7 minutes apiece, Julius Marble and Thomas Kithier, possibly to the benefit of Michigan State, especially in the case of Kithier.
They fouled out early, too. It was like 6 minutes. I'm like, wait, they're not going to have any centers left. Like, I've never seen that. It was like back-to-back.
Yeah, and Sissoko just absolutely destroyed Io on a drive, and a foul wasn't called in real time, and then they went to the monitor and it's like, oh, that's a flagrant two. You can't hit somebody in the face with both arms like that. You're out of here.
They went from it's not a foul to kicking him out, which is maybe an indictment of the officiating in the moment.
Yeah, they also missed a play earlier in that half where Coburn just like clubbed Sissoko in the back of the head.
Oh yeah. That was brutal.
Just a really dirty play. So, yeah, that was some classic Big Ten goonery in East Lansing last night.
Yeah, Sissoko would have put up a 9-minute trillion if not for the three fouls he absorbed in those 9 minutes.
And he was
overmatched.
He was rated ahead of Hunter Dickinson in the 247 composite. I just want to bring that up again.
Worth remembering. So Marcus Bingham was, like, I thought very, very obviously their best option at center. Now, he also picks up four fouls in 12 minutes, so he could not have played much more than he did. But he does go 3-for-3 from the field, adds three blocks. He's the only guy who kind of is able to hold his position a little bit against Coburn, even though he's super skinny. But, you know, at the end of this, Michigan State had to survive with some minutes and Joey Hauser playing center, and while he did take advantage of the stretch aspect of his game to can a couple threes that helped ice this game, that's by no means ideal for Michigan State. So this was kind of the like best case scenario for Michigan, where Illinois' loss all but locks up a Big Ten championship for Michigan as long as they don't really stumble down the stretch. But it isn't a game that necessarily makes you really change your opinion about Michigan State and how dangerous those two games are at the end of the season.
Yeah, if Illinois wants to miss 15 free throws against Michigan like they did against Michigan State, that would be great.
And also go 5-for-17 on threes. I would take that too. This was a weird one. A lot of weird things kind of going Michigan State's way, including, I would argue, that Foster Lawyer was not available to play in this game.
That really has been, it's like, as someone that doesn't, I mean, we're now talking about State as, you know, anything that, any conversation with me eventually devolves into talking about State. But I, it's crazy, like, I mean, Aaron Henry and Rocket Watts, even though Rocket Watts is not a natural point guard, are just clearly so much better options. Like, Foster Lawyer hasn't given you anything this year, and he goes out of the lineup and they're immediately, I'm not going to say they're good, but they're definitely a lot better. And it's just another baffling player that Tom Izzo has fallen in love with.
I don't understand Izzo this year. Like, he'll start a guy and then pull him before the first TV timeout and not put him back in the game. They'll play, Kithier and Lawyer over, like, Hogard and the other bigs. It's just, it doesn't make any sense. Oh, well.
You hate to see it. It does feel like the year a little bit where he got a little bit too far out over his skis in terms of just, believing in his ability to tinker with the lineup as much as he wants during the season and still have it work out. But they also just beat Illinois and have a very outside chance at getting into the NCAA tournament, and we're intentionally not talking about it in case they make that a more viable chance by the time Michigan plays them. So you never know. This is going to be a hell of a week coming up. I'm very excited for these three games, and hopefully by the time we're through this, Michigan has completely locked up a Big Ten title, because that is entirely possible as soon as after the Iowa game, and that would be quite fun. After this, we are going to do an opponent fan reading series that cannot come back to immediately bite us in the ass, so that's pretty good.
When your plumbing breaks, you hire someone who knows how to fix plumbing. When your power goes out, you hire an electrician. When you are injured in an accident, you should hire someone with experience. Jason Blankenship, a Michigan law graduate, has over 20 years of litigation experience to help you. Jason has handled matters and venues across the state and country, from various circuit courts across the state through the Michigan Supreme Court and the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. Jason's experience in both federal and state courts makes him able to handle your complicated personal injury case. Before starting his own firm in 2014, Jason worked at a large plaintiff's firm, but he left in order to give his clients the personal attention you and your case deserve. Jason selects each case personally, and you will deal directly with Jason to resolve your case. The insurance companies have teams of lawyers on their side. You should have someone on your side, too. Call 248-533-0516. That's 248-533-0516. Or email Jason at blankenshiplawyer.com. So as I teased before the break, we are learning. We are not going to tempt fate quite as much as we did during football season. We waited until after the game. I'm just going to turn this one over to Dan, because this started out as actually it was going to maybe be a Michigan State focus segment. And then thankfully something got published from a different rivalry realm that drew our attention instead. And became the subject of our scorn.
So this is from 11 Warriors, Ohio State blog writer David Regenball. So Ohio State fans are a different kind of psychotic as Michigan State fans, because as opposed to Michigan State fans who will never have what they want, which is, to become to... They think that they hate Michigan, but ultimately they want to become Michigan, and that, will never happen to them, and it drives them insane. Ohio State fans instead are driven mad by the exact opposite, which is that they have everything that they want, and it still does not make them happy. This manifests itself in that when Ohio State fans, encounter any level of misfortune, they are just completely unable to handle it. So this is a column titled hashtag hot take. Michigan's regular season basketball win over Ohio State is another subpar distraction for a sad fan base. And Ace and Bonds, feel free to jump in whenever you feel necessary to comment. It's great to be a Michigan Wolverine, except for the times when it is not great, which is most of the time, actually. This may good come one. Off as yeah, that's yeah, that's great, dude.
Strong start. Yeah, love it.
That's what they teach you in writing school is just, you know, make sure you really hook them in with that first lead.
Yeah, you got to start with a strong thesis.
Exactly. This may come as sour grapes to some of you. That's fair, but you're wrong and an idiot for thinking so. Let me explain.
Does he know what sour grapes are?
In the aftermath of Michigan's 92-87 victory over Ohio State Sunday afternoon, I was admittedly bummed but equally entertained by a well-played game where it looked like both teams had fun. For the most part, outside of the Wolverines' late run that was fueled by a remarkably dumb no-look behind-the-back pass to a screener who wasn't paying attention, the two squads on the court looked very much like contenders primed to make some noise next month.
Yeah, in the words of Rasheed Wallace, both teams played hard.
Both teams had fun.
As the CBS broadcast shifted to golf coverage, yeah, I watch golf both voluntarily and gleefully.
Could this guy get to the point for fuck's sake?
I know, seriously.
Gotta love that interjection.
Ohio State fans do not have this much. Like, this is the most they've ever read in their whole lives.
Oh, my God.
I was grateful for a quick distraction, but it got me thinking. Distractions are important. When teams I care for suffer a loss once a decade, I use past victories as a coping mechanism. Many of us do. We can relive Ezekiel Elliott's near criminal assaults of Wisconsin, Alabama, and Oregon on...
on man, Ohio that is State. Not the phrasing I would have chosen.
No, no.
I was about to say it, but we might have to cut that. But yeah, that's not
no,
what I
no,
said.
No, 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 no. He deserves scorn for that phrasing.
Yeah, yikes.
Yeah, that's bad.
Yikes.
Buddy.
When I'm down on the Buckeyes, I just remember Zach Smith.
coaching Michael Thomas to a 600-yard season or whatever.
Alabama and Oregon on Ohio State's way to their first ever college football playoff national championship.
Did he really write that all out?
Yeah, I can't believe. Yeah, we can rewind 12 years from then and bask in the glow of a bunch of slow Midwesterners usurping a dynasty in Tempe, Arizona, and then some of the olds among us can conjure the glory days under Woody Hayes. What is he talking about? Never mind. I was not conscious for the when they beat Miami. Like, but of how do? By the way, you can't say Ohio State is a bunch of slow Midwesterners. This isn't Hoosiers. It's the Ohio State. Jesus yeah. Christ, a bunch of underdogs.
I mean, I assume he's at least saying that tongue in cheek. But the rest of this also makes it hard to give him the benefit of the
yeah,
doubt.
Yeah, exactly. Then there's the 1B tier of memories. The sweet victories over rivals you love to hate. The turn of the century November dominance over the team up north. That Fiesta Bowl win over Clemson from a month ago. The sweet demolition of Notre Dame in various New Year's Bowl games. Or how about William Buford urinated all over Draymond Green Senior Day?
I actually love that one because that one gave Michigan a share of the Big Ten championship. Like if Michigan State had won that game, Michigan would not have gotten that banner. And I also got to say, this is the most masturbatory writing I've ever heard.
Supposedly
shitting on Michigan. It's just, you remember this cool time Ohio State won or that cool time Ohio State won?
Also, describing that like Ohio State Michigan State hoops game in a way that conjures the image of a Calvin peeing on something bumper sticker really takes something, and it's in Ohio State something.
I'm thinking a number 45 golden shower there actually.
That one is so underrated. I'm not going to read this.
thank you for skipping.
Yeah, but looking through this lens as a Michigan fan is, well, depressing. The top tier of memories is few and far between. Dating back to 1948, yeah, 3 years after World War II ended. Thank you. Appreciate that. awesome, dude.
I wonder how many historical events besides World War II this guy could pull out of this.
It's like people's only benchmark in history. Michigan's football and basketball teams can just claim two national titles. The football title came in 1997, and it's a distinction the Wolverines technically share with Nebraska, which finished that season 13-0 to earn a coaches' poll national championship. These two teams never got the chance to settle things on the field because, much like Michigan's football success, college football was old-timey, dumb, and bad. This is 1997.
How much shit do we already know? Is he going to tell us?
Yeah, it's unbelievable, dude. Like, this is literally just transcribing. Like, this is running like, you know, the Bucknuts forum through like, you know, a spell check, basically.
This is the world's worst Wikipedia page.
Yeah. The lone basketball championship came in 19. Another Wikipedia section.
This is like, can we get some citations?
Also,
he says
the lone basketball championship came in 1989 when the Wolverines beat Seton Hall 80-79 in an overtime thriller. A really cool memory for any 32-year-old Michigan fans able to recall memories from infancy. Like, that's not that old. I'm sorry.
Hi, I'm 33.
Yeah.
I do not remember Rubio Robinson's free throws, but I do have very distinct memories of many wins over Ohio State in football and a football national championship. So kiss my ass.
Yeah. I don't, but Ace does, so that's, you know, that's fair.
And meanwhile, basketball exists, which we're going to get to soon here.
So that's where the well runs dry for modern-day Michigan fans. After that, the 1B tier of memories is fueled by the basketball team's recent success and that one football season in 2011 when Michigan managed to sneak by the worst Ohio State team in at least half a century. The notable 1B memories are highlighted by yesterday's solid win over Ohio State. Then there's that March Madness run in 2018 that features wins over Chex Notes. Thanks for using, like, the most overplayed gimmick of a comedic advice, like, currently on Twitter. 14 seed Montana, 6 seed Houston, 7 seed Texas A&M, 9 seed Florida State, and 11 seed Loyola Chicago before getting pantsed by top seed Villanova in the title game.
Yeah, you know what?
Yeah, that was shameful.
Yeah, that Final Four run, it wasn't even fun. Like, I didn't enjoy it at all. We beat bad teams. Like, it was awful.
The just out of nowhere nature of it is really what made it just unenjoyable for me, is that we weren't even expecting it. It wasn't one of Beeline's better teams. It just didn't feel like they really earned it. And yet they made the national championship game anyway. It's so sad that we have to live with those kind of accomplishments as Michigan basketball fans to get us through the day.
Yeah. And, of course, that's the only time also that, you know, Michigan made a Final Four run in recent memory. I mean,
yeah, and the wins in that one definitely weren't impressive.
He also, I think, like, this is also – oh, no, he does say in the next paragraph, the 2013 tournament run was a solid showcase up until Michigan lost to a Louisville team that was essentially a walking NCAA violation in the title game.
Like, was that supposed to diminish the accomplishments?
Yeah, what? Also, just, like, the richness of an Ohio State fan calling, you know, Louisville a walking NCAA violation. Like, I'm glad that we agree that devalues accomplishments, because I'm ready to write off the 2014 Ohio State National Championship if that's the case.
And the one that he talked about earlier that featured Maurice Clarett.
Right. Yeah. Needless to say, it's been tough sledding. By the way, this is my favorite part here. Needless to say, it's been tough sledding for our dearest rivals since the turn of the century, and there isn't much in the way of distraction for the fan base when things go poorly. But hey, at least things are turning around against little brother in their own backyard. Whoops, wait, never mind. Like, really, you gotta feel like you bring in Michigan State to fight your battles for you here? Like, as an Ohio State fan, it's just so lame.
You know, that is kind of a clever inversion of the trope of Michigan State fans being like, well, wait until you guys play Ohio State, you're gonna get your asses beaten then.
That is, I mean... it's such a my life has been made worse in so many ways since Michigan lost to Michigan State this year. But I mean, that was one of the better things, is like, we really were starting to cook with the them bringing up Ohio State anytime that they lost to Michigan.
Yeah. And, you know, we don't have anything to hold on to besides, you know, the golden era of Michigan basketball and the best young college basketball coach in the country. That's, you know. Yeah, real tough stuff here in Ann Arbor. Like, I sometimes I even forget that we have a football program until you and Connor start debating, you know, whether the 10th assistant is going to bring us to glory or not.
As the rest of us in the group chat start screaming. Yeah.
No, it's basketball season.
I mean, look, I've been trying to be better about it. It's I've I'm not working myself up about the football team. I'm thoroughly enjoying the basketball team. I've taken the hoops pill.
Yeah, there's no black bile when it comes to basketball. It's, you know, we lose and it's whatever. Everything looks great. We have three McDonald's All-Americans coming in next year to replace this awesome team.
Yeah, I mean, it does feel like this team is playing with house money a little bit. But even if they win a national championship, I mean, it's just not going to be the same as getting a, you know, a regular season football win. So, you know.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
My 1B memories of watching Trey Burke hit an all-time great March Madness shot or going to two Final Fours in person, you know.
Yeah, the Oklahoma State Louisville weekend that occurred in Indianapolis. Yeah, that was, you know.
Consecutive Big Ten tournament championships in which they defeated the number one seed. Yeah.
The plane crash squad. I mean. Seriously.
Yeah, it's really has been just such an embarrassment of, like, just not even great teams, but also great memories from the Hoops program. And, like, I'd be hard-pressed to find a program with, like, a better, like, a more enjoyable run the past decade. I don't know. It would be tough.
Yeah, I mean, if Michigan had finished off one of these national championships, they'd have a pretty comparable run to, say, Ohio State football lately. And for somebody who enjoys basketball as much, if not more, than football, and I understand that is not, you know, the way it falls in American popular culture, but
Ann Arbor.
Yeah, but yes, that's very true. You know, I'll take that 1B. I'll take that 1B.
And Michigan it hasn't been just that Michigan basketball's been good. Michigan basketball's been fun. Like, aesthetics to me does matter. Like, I would take Virginia's run of success, but man, that is not fun basketball to watch. And I'm so happy that, you know, Beilein had such a beautiful offense, that, you know, Juwan has incorporated more pro style elements and, you know, post heavy offense, but still, you know, they run great stuff. They have, you know, really good plays, and yeah, it's,
well, they play
it's
faster
fun.
Now, so yeah. That I mean, that's made up for some of the, you know, less intricate Beilein type stuff that was kind of beautiful to watch,
right? But you see a lot of, like, quick hitters and stuff with wrinkles out of the normal sets that, you know, if you really listen to people like Matt and you know, can kind of consume that content, you really start to see the complexity and beauty of Michigan's offense, even though it's more of on the 24-second timeline than Beilein's, you know, 40-second shot clock from way back in the day.
Oh, there's a remarkable amount of complexity because you have to do stuff in that 24-second timeline a lot of the time, and I've had a great deal of fun watching film of this team coming down the stretch here. So
yeah, so,
but anyway, so my final thesis here to get back to the,
yeah, no, we have to return to just the cope post.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that this is something that happens to a lot of totalitarian leaders, and Ohio State
didn't go that way.
And Ohio State, in a lot of ways, you know, does have a lot of fascistic elements to their fan base, one of the key tenets of, you know, fascism or any totalitarian leader is that, you know, it's not enough to dominate and to have power and to be successful. You're not allowed to make fun of them. You have to love them. You know, it's an insult to, you know, their ego whenever they are questioned, even for something as small as, you know, losing a regular season basketball game. And that's what this post is ultimately about. And that's what being an Ohio State fan is about. So, you know, just my advice to any Ohio State fan is just enjoy the run you're on. Like, have fun with it. And, you know, don't worry
and
about
cram it.
You know,
exactly. And eat shit.
You know, I would say that, you know, comparing them to a fascist dictatorship might be a little bit of a stretch. But then again, I don't know any dictators that would dress their dead grandmothers in Ezekiel Elliott jerseys and Buckeye necklaces in the coffin. So
they've done some interesting things. This post did feel like the equivalent of getting mad at someone for calling your school Ohio when you cross out every M in every tweet you send, or at least 80% of them. Which, again, very, you know, extremely on brand. So I guess this was the perfect 11 Warriors post.
I got to say, I love that bit because them not getting all of the M's is like the only little bit of joy I can take from the football rivalry.
It's so routinely just happens control every time.
F.
They never get all of them.
You just control F, replace. It's like they look for each and every one.
Well, this is what we have to hold. These are our actual 1B victories, is how silly Ohio State fans are while they're kicking our asses in football.
Hey,
the basketball
no.
victories are 1A victories,
yeah.
And we would have won.
Exactly.
We would have won. So we
yes,
will. I'm sorry. We would have won. I apologize for getting off the Ace Pod brand. And now that we have said that we would have won, and we did win on Sunday, and it was, I would say, a pretty solid, actually 1B victory is fair. Michigan's had so many basketball victories that it's hard to put any regular season win that wasn't over Michigan State in that 1A column. So with apologies to Ohio State, that part of the 11 Warriors article was actually a little bit accurate. On that note, this was A-Spot Episode 3.10. Thank you to Alex and Dan for joining me. Please check out Alex's blog. I am going to get that in the show notes for you. We are brought to you, as always, by the law offices of E. Jason Blankenship. Thank you for listening. Cue the music.